It's the NPR News Update for Wednesday, May 22nd, Minnesota's news on your schedule. I'm Matt Sepik in for Phil Picardi. In the news today, the Mall of America wins a long-sought state subsidy for a major expansion. Top lawmakers from both parties give their postmortem on the just-concluded legislative session, and Medtronic is firing 2,000 workers, including hundreds here in Minnesota. The owners of the Mall of America are getting a tax break to fund a $1.5 billion expansion. Lawmakers passed the $250 million subsidy this week just before the legislative session ended. The Triple Five group that owns the mall says the expansion will include hotels, a water park, a performing arts center, and hundreds more stores, among other things. The Pioneer Press reports the plan was drafted back in 2006 but remained on the shelf while mall owners awaited a subsidy. A second teenager has pleaded guilty in the shooting death of a 5-year-old boy who was killed in North Minneapolis last summer. 16-year-old Julian Anderson pleaded guilty as an adult to second-degree intentional murder and was sentenced to 28 years in prison. In exchange for his guilty plea, Hennepin County prosecutors dropped 2 first-degree murder charges and another second-degree charge against Anderson. He was 15 last June when prosecutors say he and 17-year-old Stefan Shannon stood outside a house and fired at least 10 shots at it. One of the bullets tore through the front wall and killed young Nazelle George, who was sleeping on his grandmother's couch. Shannon pleaded guilty previously and was also sentenced to 28 years. Medical device maker Medtronic says it's laying off 2,000 workers in its global workforce, a quarter of them here in Minnesota. Annie Baxter reports.
Medtronic is consolidating manufacturing operations in its cardiovascular and spine businesses. The layoffs in those divisions are expected to save as much as $225 million a year. A Medtronic spokeswoman says newly added positions will offset some of the cuts in Minnesota, leaving a net reduction in the state of 340 jobs. Jeff Windau is a healthcare analyst with Edward Jones. He says factors driving layoffs at Medtronic are not unique to the company. Windau says the whole medical device industry is suffering.
The usage has gone down, the volume has gone down in procedures. There's more pricing pressure in the industry that they have to take into account.
The job cuts were announced in Medtronic's fourth quarter earnings call with investors. The company's net income fell 2% to about $970 million. Annie Baxter, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Governor Mark Dayton says his first session with his party in full control of the state legislature was a success. Dayton talked about results of the 5-month session on Tuesday at a news conference with top DFL lawmakers. He pushed back against Republican suggestions that the DFL had overreached after winning complete control of state government in last year's election.
Most of the revenues we raised, and raised progressively, are going to things that are going to benefit middle-class Minnesotans. Better education system, more jobs, better jobs. The investments that we're making in Mayo Clinic, 3M, Mall of America, and a couple of other companies' expansions is just what government should be doing and just what the Republicans refuse to acknowledge government should be doing.
Republicans, meanwhile, say increased taxes and a daycare unionization bill DFL lawmakers passed this year may bring a political backlash and hurt Minnesota's economic recovery. As Dan Gunderson reports, GOP leaders toured the state on Tuesday to give their take on a session where they were on the sidelines of the budget debate and other issues.
House Republican leader Kurt Dowd says, looking back on the legislative session, he's
a bit disappointed with the direction that the Democrats decided to go, raising a total of $2.1 billion in new taxes and likely about $300 million in new fees. And the bottom line on the budget that the Democrats have passed for Minnesota, every Minnesotan will pay more.
Dowd says new taxes and fees will slow economic growth in Minnesota. He says the DFL majority overreached when it voted to approve same-sex marriage and allow daycare providers to vote on unionization. He says those issues will hurt Democrats during the next election cycle. Dan Gunderson, Minnesota Public Radio News, Moorhead.
After Governor Dayton signs the new state budget, tax increases will be a reality for cigarette smokers and high-income earners. But Democrats also came up with other ways to raise money. State Revenue Commissioner Myron Franz parsed it all out with Phil Picardi today on Morning Edition.
Well, some business-to-business taxes will be hiked with the signing of this bill. What are they and how is it decided which services would be taxed and which wouldn't?
One of the things that we started off talking about was the lowering of property taxes. So property taxes will be going down, but they did, in their sales tax proposal, propose that telecommunications equipment, the capital equipment used in telecommunications, would be taxable, repair services for manufacturing electronic equipment, and also warehousing storage services would be taxable.
And how is that decided, which companies would end up paying taxes?
Well, you have to look at each one of them individually. I think one of the things that we'll be putting some more details out in the next several weeks from the Department of Revenue to clarify a little bit more what those companies will be and who will be affected. But, for example, in the warehousing area, which doesn't go into effect until April of 2014, that's only for business use of warehousing space. So if you're an individual or you're using like mini storage or something like that, that would not be taxable. It would just be for businesses that use the storage space, warehouse space. It would not include agricultural products, for example. So there are a number of exclusions that we have to explain to everyone so they'll have a better understanding of what's taxable and what's not.
And for those businesses that say, look out, maybe they won't expand here or come here if they're from another state, you don't agree?
No, I don't think so. Yeah, one of the things that was really critical when I was traveling around the state this last year and met with just thousands of people and many, many businesses, and one of the key concerns they had was the property tax. And so one of the things that we're doing is putting more money into local government aid, both city government aid, county government aid, and township aid. So I think we'll see some tax reductions there. There's also been some reduction in the education levy. That'll bring down property taxes around the state. And for individuals, we're going to see property taxes go down for some of those folks who qualify for the direct homeowner property tax credit and the renter's credit. So you really, I think, have to look at the entire package.
Well, neither Governor Dayton nor House Taxes Committee Chair Ann Lencheski made any bones about the cigarette tax hike at $1.60 a pack. They want to prevent people from smoking. But doesn't that tax increase hit those who are least able to pay?
Well, that is one of the really tough decisions. I will tell you that I know Governor Dayton struggled a lot with that issue because of the fact that it does hit folks in the lower income range. It's a regressive tax. We all know that. But I think both Chair Lencheski and Chair Scoy on the Senate side and Governor Dayton came to terms with the fact that this is a health issue. The cost of smoking really far exceed the taxes that are paid, and the cost to all of us really are enormous. And I think everyone realizes we just have to do what we can to make sure young people don't start smoking and those folks who are smoking stop. So it really is a health issue.
Back when you were first named Revenue Commissioner, you conducted more than 160 meetings across the state with the goal of replacing the current tax system with one that's simpler, fairer, and up-to-date. Does this tax bill going to the governor accomplish these goals?
Well, it does in many ways. I think some people have been complaining that they don't see much reform in this package. But, for example, I mean, reforming the income tax to make it more fair was one of the key elements, and then we have accomplished that. The other element that is clearly a big part of reform is the corporate income tax. We've eliminated a number of corporate deductions to try to make the corporate income tax more fair and to try to level the playing field. I don't think there's ever been this many corporate income tax deductions eliminated, or tax expenditures, as we call them. Right now, only 4 out of every 10 corporations pay income tax, state income tax, in Minnesota. So we really want to try to simplify and make the corporate income tax more fair. And this, we've made a tremendous stride in that area.
All right, Commissioner, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much, Phil.
That was State Revenue Commissioner Myron Franz speaking with Phil Picardi. This is the NPR News Update, Minnesota's news on your schedule. While Republicans didn't get their way on the budget and taxes, they did have success beating back expanded gun background checks that were part of a DFL gun control bill this year. But lawmakers were able to pass a public safety finance measure that includes measures to shore up the state's criminal background check system and to fund school safety programs. Brant Williams has more on what's in that legislation.
The public safety bill contains several measures designed to prevent people who shouldn't have guns from getting them. For example, the law shortens the amount of time law enforcement and courts have to submit data on felons and other people ineligible to possess firearms to the State Bureau of Criminal Apprehension and the National Instant Criminal Background Check System. Police chiefs and county sheriffs across the state use information from these resources when they consider applications for permits to purchase or to carry firearms. Hennepin County Sheriff Rich Stanek says the centerpiece of the legislation is the measure requiring the state court system to add the names of people civilly committed for mental illness going back nearly 20 years, back to when the federal government created the background check system.
In Minnesota, that law took effect in 1994. Minnesota did not comply or contribute those records until 2010.
State courts officials estimate they will need to add about 67,000 case files in order to fill in that 16-year gap. The legislature approved more than $1 million to pay for the manpower it will take to locate the files and convert the paper records to digital format. Court officials say 12 employees will be assigned to complete the task before the July 1, 2014 deadline set by the legislation. Stanek, who has long advocated for fixing the background check system before passing any new gun laws, says legislators struck the right balance between public safety and protecting the Second Amendment.
The Second Amendment's Constitution is not a privilege, it's a right. And, you know, Minnesota policymakers, elected officials, governor on down, need to understand that. And they can pass public policy, but you cannot infringe on Second Amendment rights of the citizens of this state or this country.
However, Stanek and others say the legislation could have been a little more extensive. Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman helped craft a list of prosecutor-friendly measures that didn't make it into the final legislation. Freeman says prosecutors could have used these new laws to reduce gun violence. Freeman says he particularly favored stronger punishments for straw buyers, or people legally able to buy guns, who sell or give them to people who can't legally possess them. Freeman says straw buyers are often women who buy guns for their boyfriends or husbands.
If this law would have passed, and it should have, we could have prosecuted her and put pressure on her to get him to plead guilty. It would be an aiding and abetting type crime.
The bill with these measures was relatively non-controversial and unopposed by gun rights groups. Freeman, a former DFL state legislator, says the proposals would have passed if they were separated from a larger package of laws and voted on separately. However, Representative Michael Paymar, a Democrat from St. Paul, says the prosecutor's bills were expensive. Plus, Paymar, who spearheaded efforts in the House to pass gun control this session, says he was intent on passing laws focused more on preventing gun violence than on punishing people breaking gun laws. The public safety bill also included money for school safety programs and in-school mental health assessments. Paymar says he's glad these measures passed, but says he's frustrated that one of his main priorities, expanded background checks for gun sales, didn't.
If you looked at the polling data, 75-80% of Minnesotans supported background checks, as did law enforcement, yet we didn't even get a hearing on the House floor. We didn't even get a vote on the House floor.
Paymar says despite the popularity of background checks, the NRA and other gun rights groups convinced lawmakers to oppose the measure. But he says gun control supporters shouldn't give up. Paymar says it took supporters of another controversial issue, same-sex marriage, 2 years to gain influence with citizens and lawmakers. And he says advocates for extended background checks and other gun laws will have to keep working to gain supporters and come back to the Capitol next year. Brant Williams, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
Staying in Minneapolis now, the city could elect its first Somali American to the city council this year. Abdi Warsami has never run for office before, but he won the DFL primary endorsement last month over a three-term incumbent. Curtis Gilbert has more.
Verses from the Quran echo through the Riverside Mall in Minneapolis. The building sits in the heart of the city's East African community. It bustles with tailors, rug merchants, a coffee shop, and it's also home to Abdi Warsami's campaign office. The campaign has an ambitious mission. Warsami wants to change the way his fellow Somali Americans see politics.
This community that I'm from doesn't believe in the system. They only think President Obama solves problems. When the presidential election, they get very excited. But they don't understand that what actually impacts their lives is dealt with, not by the federal government, but by the local government, by the city.
Warsami ticks off a list of concerns facing his community: jobs, roads, housing, youth in need of mentors. And he says his campaign has mobilized a group of people who now understand city politics matter. As proof, Warsami points to the Minneapolis DFL Ward 6 convention last month. His supporters dominated the delegation and easily handed him party endorsement.
You see these old ladies waving American flags, you know, with the hijabs and crying and feeling that they were part of the system. I think that's the most powerful thing, and that's what motivates me.
Warsami has lived in the U.S. for just 7 years. He was born in Somalia, but moved to London with his family as a young child. He grew up there and earned a master's degree in international business. He's currently the executive director of the Riverside Tenants Association, which advocates for the 4,000 people who live in the Riverside Plaza high-rises. Warsami's first taste of politics came in 2011 when he worked on the campaign of Mohamed Nur, who narrowly lost the DFL primary for a state Senate seat. Warsami saw that if Somali Americans could consolidate their voting power, they could wield more political influence. So at a series of public hearings last year, he pushed the city to redraw its political map in a way that maximized the East African community's voting power.
If this map is approved, our community will have greater confidence in the American system and way of life.
The Minneapolis Charter Commission complied. The new map was designed to concentrate as many East African voters as possible into a single city council ward. That's the ward Warsami is running to represent now, and it's the one currently represented by Councilmember Robert Lilligren. Lilligren doesn't agree consolidating Somali voters empowers them. He argues it's better to have a diversity of cultures.
And that means that people need to figure out how to work together, work across cultural lines, racial lines, language lines, economic lines. And I think that's very healthy. And I think in that type of an environment, someone like me, kind of a Screamy Phillips activist, Native American, gay, can get elected.
Lilligren also disapproves of the way Warsami won the DFL endorsement. He says Warsami's campaign played dirty in the precinct caucuses.
There was bullying, intimidation, suppression of participation, what I would call deliberate confusion of the process. Many of my supporters in the East African community, Somali community, expressed to me that they were afraid to participate.
Some of Lilligren's supporters also allege Warsami's campaign attacked Lilligren for being gay. Lilligren's campaign has asked the DFL to rescind its endorsement. Another candidate, Mohamed Kali, has also filed a complaint with the DFL. Warsami calls the allegations absurd, and he says they're insulting to the more than 1,300 people who turned out at the caucuses.
When you play down the achievement of a whole community, when you play down the achievements of these old people, these new Americans who want to participate in the system and say, you know what, they were successful only because of harassment, I think that's terrible.
The state DFL party is scheduled to rule on the matter next month. Curtis Gilbert, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
That'll do it for the NPR News Update for Wednesday, May 22nd. I'm Matt Sepik. Thanks for downloading.